Welcome back to the program. What do you do if you're a veteran Wall Street trader who worked for Lehman Brothers when the collapse came, and to make matters even worse, you were struck down by an ambulance? You had to go through months of recovery, and then when you finally returned to work, you were fired. What you do is turn to a new job in a $380 billion industry that can return profits even bigger than Wall Street, the world of sports gambling. That's what Joe Pita did, but with a difference. He used his skill as a Wall Street trader to bring discipline and metrics to sports betting, riffing off the previous work done by Bill James and Nate Silva. He would turn his dark days into a 41% profit, and in the process, learn a lot more about Wall Street, gambling, and baseball. It is my pleasure to welcome Joe Pita to the program today to talk about his book about his experiences entitled Trading Bases, a story about Wall Street, gambling, and baseball. Joe Pita, thanks so much for joining us.
Jeff, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here. So you were at Lehman Brothers, the crash came, you get hit by an ambulance, you go back to work, you get fired. Not a good situation, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely proves that old adage, if you make a plan, God laughs at you. And that's certainly true. I was, even after the Lehman Brothers collapse, and Lehman Brothers was my employer for 13 years, and, that was a painful collapse, not just because, we all lost money, but I loved Lehman Brothers. And I even try to touch on the book, really some of the rough charm of Dick Fuld, who recruited me personally when I was an MBA at Stanford. And I really fell under his spell way back in the mid-90s. And Lehman really had a great esprit de corps. And unfortunately, it went south because of poor risk management, led by Dick. And I try to touch upon that in the book. But then you're right, in 2011, I was beginning my 15th year. I was at a different bank at that point. I was beginning my 15th year as a trader. And in New York City, I got run over by an ambulance. And I suffered a crushed leg. And I was in a wheelchair, and then I did get fired, and essentially I couldn't go out and interview. I mean, I literally was in a wheelchair. So I was stranded from my family who lived in San Francisco. So I turned to baseball that spring to sort of occupy my mind and try to fill my days. And not only did I look at baseball from sort of a sabermetric approach, and that really helped me mentally, I also rediscovered, just how much I loved baseball.
How did you make that leap? You were in the wheelchair, you were recovering, you turned to baseball as something that was a pastime. How did you make the leap to something that you might start gambling on, that you could apply these metrics in a way that was consistent with what you had done and what you had learned as a trader?
As I turned to really, I knew what sabermetrics was, and now I think the mainstream America understands at least its existence because of a movie like Moneyball. But I decided, since I had all this free time, that I'd actually open up my computer and really dive into these numbers. And as I did, and I started using them to build projections for teams for the 2011 season, I realized this was the same type of model building and the same type of data analysis that we would do on Wall Street to value companies. And of course, when I'm valuing companies, if I find one that's over or undervalued, I know what I want to do. I either want to sell it or buy it. And in this case, I started thinking like a trader, and I said, okay, if I have these teams, some of which I think are undervalued, let's see if there's a way, let's think like a trader, and I'll actually bet on some of these games. But I'm going to bring the discipline of risk management and capital allocation that I learned from working at a hedge fund for a number of years, and that's what I tried to bring to this idea of betting on baseball.
And talk about your own personal evolution with this from essentially a pastime, a hobby, to something that really became the total focus of your energy and your work.
Yeah, that's I realized as I started doing this, and it was at first, look, on when you work on Wall Street or work in, I think, any employer who has a whole bunch of 20 or 30 something guys that are in the same room, you're going to find out there's a lot of guys that bet on sports. And certainly on Wall Street, I always like to say that the second most popular person on the trading desk after the guy who brings the chicken parm sandwiches every day is the local bookie in New York. So we all were familiar with betting on football and basketball, and I view that pastime as gambling as entertainment. We're all going to spend net money doing that over time, and then in that sense, I think of it no different as going to the movies or spending money on video games. I took a different approach to this as the season started. I realized that what I was doing, since it was so model-based and it was working off the tenets and principles that men like Bill James and Nate Silver had created, that there really was no emotion in this, that I was building something that was simply trying to identify under or overvalued assets. And in that sense, I thought, all right, let's not look at this as gambling as entertainment. Let's look at this as a fund, the same way I would if I were looking at a population of stocks that I were going to pick some to put in my portfolio. I would be very cautious with my capital allocation, and that's what I would be trying to make a very realistic return. And I would think of my return not in terms of, oh, I'm trying to make $1,000, but I'm trying to make 10% on my capital. And that's how that was the evolution of how I thought about it, and I carried that through the season.
So you essentially created an investment model for Major League Baseball.
That would be exactly right. And I was able to do that. I didn't reinvent anything. I was able to build off all the work in baseball, with baseball data that had been done before me.
Talk a little bit about why baseball, more than so many other sports, lends itself to this kind of analysis.
Yeah, baseball has such a rich data set, dating back really it's a century worth of data. Thanks to the fact that, baseball and the numbers of baseball have always kind of had a hold on the American psyche. The numbers just mean something in baseball, and therefore data has been collected. So that's the first reason. Then the other reason is if you're actually modeling the future, baseball lends itself to that very well, because if you think of what a baseball game is, it's really just a confrontation. It's about 70 confrontations between pitcher and catcher. So those are the only skill sets that you need to measure. It's much less interdependent on teammates than, say, football. And the example I always use of that is no matter what team Justin Verlander plays for, no matter what stadium he pitches in, no matter who the opponent is, no matter who the catcher is, I know Justin Verlander is going to strike out about 31% of the batters he faces. But I can't say that about Tom Brady. Tom Brady is equally at the top of his profession as Justin Verlander is, but if I move Tom Brady to the Kansas City Chiefs, his numbers will look very different because he'll have a different offensive line. He'll have different receivers. His head coach might have a different scheme. And therefore, it's much more difficult to model basketball and football because of that interdependence.
And yet it's ironic, I suppose, that in baseball there is even more talk about superstition and about streaks and about all those things that are kind of antithetical to this model.
Yes, momentum. There would be one, right? Momentum. The idea that, hey, they're carrying last night's great win into the clubhouse the next day. Yeah, my model does more or less turn its back on items like that. And in fact, you might say, if those items are reflected in a team's price the next day, oh, my model is going to certainly pick against them. And I always kind of use the example of the Yankees in the postseason. The price of the Yankees in any game of a postseason, I always think, carries a premium like an Hermes scarf. We all know the Yankees are good, but it just seems like people betting on it can't envision the Yankees losing, so they just drive up that price a little bit more. And that doesn't mean they're going to lose, but it does create value for someone that is a model-based gambler.
What about the relationship between talent and success and how that applies on a team level beyond just the individual level, as we've been talking about?
Yeah, Jeff, I think that's really what my model attempts to do, is identify talent and not necessarily success or past results that may indicate or may not indicate success. And I'll even say, and I try to really explore this in the book, that it's not just baseball and it's not just me trying to build a model that should be doing this. I think baseball is ahead of other industries in terms of using its data to identify talent as opposed to just pointing to past results. And I think, an example in baseball is when you look at pitchers, let's not look, I think, many people will determine if a pitcher is successful or not by looking at his wins and losses and maybe his earned run average. My model will say those two statistics are very dependent on what his teammates did around him. How much, you know, how much offense they generated determines his wins and losses. How good his defense behind him was may have to do with his earned run average. What my model instead will do is it will look at his strikeout rate, his walk rate, his ground ball rate, and his fly ball rate and say, these are the skills that he can control, and that's going to be more indicative. That talent is going to be more indicative if he's going to win or lose in the future than looking at whether he won or lost in the future.
Can these models be essentially quantified in a way that you could take your model and 10 other people could use it and have the same or similar results?
I think the template would be the same. Whether they'd come up with the same results, this was interesting. I gave a talk at Sloan, at the MIT Sloan Sports Conference 2 weeks ago, which is essentially, as my wife called it, it's nerd high school. And there are people there like Michael Lewis and Nate Silver, and Bill James has been the keynote speaker there. And it's what you find out is, or what I found out after speaking there, was there are a ton of people just like me. They are passionate about sports, they're passionate about data, and most of all, they love critical reasoning. And if they have a way that they can make money off of their critical reasoning, they will try that. But you do find out that everybody treats their inputs and their models a little bit differently so that everybody can come up with different answers. So the template might be the same, but I think that it's still up to there's still some art in what the inputs and what weight to put on those inputs should be.
And as you look at the totality of this, what you were doing and then what success you had doing this with respect to baseball, what does it tell you about the links in your own mind between Las Vegas and Wall Street?
Yeah, I think they're very strong. And not just from the standpoint, and I even think some of the links between data and baseball and Wall Street are strong too, but specifically Vegas and Wall Street, I think that Vegas should look to Wall Street right now, and I really thought this after spending a summer out there last summer, which is sort of the topic of the epilogue of the book. Las Vegas should look to Wall Street for its best practices and see what they do to attract the type of investors, the type of hedge fund investors who might be interested in investing in these guys with models. Because I think Las Vegas could expand their market a lot if they took up if they looked to Wall Street and said, okay, how does Wall Street deal with customers that are smarter than them? Because I traded biotech stocks for 5 or 6 years, and I got to tell you, I was always the dumbest person at the table. Because the mutual funds and the hedge funds that are buying from me, the guys that are making the decisions and the women that are making decisions are doctors and biologists, and they understand the science. But yet I could still run a thriving business by understanding how to bring everybody metaphorically into the same room, get them trading against each other, and as a middleman, simply take out little pieces of their transactions.
If more data could be made available for football and basketball, if we use the same kind of data, the same depth of data that is available for baseball, could these metrics have an impact?
Yeah, I think so. And I think what I learned, for instance, at Sloan when I was up there, and there are a ton of NBA executives who come to that conference, and many NFL executives, and there were executives from the San Francisco 49ers there and the Golden State Warriors. And what you learn is that while this work with data was done really by outsiders in baseball, and all of that data is publicly available as a result, in football and basketball, the work that's been done over the last decade has been done at the team level, and they keep their arms around it, and it becomes proprietary, and each team is doing something a little different, but it's definitely being done. It's just not in the public domain.
And as the aggregation of data and what everybody refers to today as big data becomes more sophisticated, it's arguable it's going to have a more profound effect on sports gambling in general.
I completely agree. I think that more analytical minds will turn to this arena. And it's possible sports gambling is getting more of an acceptance across America. There's, I think a lot of people have been following what's going on in New Jersey. You've got Governor Christie, who clearly has national ambitions for a national office, and yet he is leading this fight to legalize gambling in his state, so he's clearly not afraid that that's going to be used against him should he run for national office. So I think big data will help expand this industry.
The irony of all of this, additionally, is that if you had taken the data and done the appropriate analysis of it, it's possible to predict that Lehman Brothers would have had the fate that it had.
Well, there's no question that Lehman Brothers went under because of bad decision-making and especially bad risk management, and it really is, it's inexcusable. And I always tell people, and I mention in the book, Lehman Brothers, the sin of Lehman Brothers wasn't from investing in real estate. Hey, we all make bad investments, we all make bad decisions, and we all have losing trades. The problem is they made that bet so big that if it lost, they would wipe out the company, and that is the biggest sin you can ever make as a trader.
Now that you had this successful experience and you've written about it in Trading Bases, what is your future in terms of sports gambling?
Well, I don't think I have a future in terms of sports gambling. This was a great project. If I were to do anything with it tangentially, I would love to work with the industry in Las Vegas and help facilitate these model builders that would follow me. You know, look, there's a lot of rocket scientists a lot smarter than me. I would like, being that my background is as a market maker, I would love to work with Las Vegas and expand their industry from that side of the counter. But this has been a wonderful experience writing as well, and if getting hit by an ambulance helped me make a career change and sort of reinvent myself as a writer as well, that would be a wonderful change.
What does Las Vegas think about this? Because it really gives the individual a leg up over the house.
Yeah, and this is the difference between – this is why I think Las Vegas has to start thinking like Wall Street. You are more or less treated like the enemy, and understandably so, because you're right. You're betting against the house. What I think Las Vegas should do is look to their business model, you know, just down the hall where they have their poker rooms. And these are poker rooms, mind you, that expanded so much over the last decade, they ripped out slot machines, which we all know, if you're ripping out the highest margin product you have on the floor to replace it with something else, that other thing must be making you a lot of money. And that's the poker rooms. And in the poker rooms, what Las Vegas does is they facilitate all these guys who have moved to Las Vegas to play poker and all the tourists who come in and want to play poker, and they facilitate it so that they can all get into the same room. They don't play against the casinos. The casinos merely charge rent. And I think that that's the kind of model they should be adopting going forward to deal with model-based sports builders or sports-based model builders.
Joe Pita. His book is Trading Bases, a story about Wall Street, gambling, and baseball, not necessarily in that order. Joe, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Jeff, thanks for having me on.
Thank you.